Got some tardy people in the back coming in slowly. Just kidding. Good morning. We're going to wrap up the book of Ruth. Wrap up this quarter with this lesson. This morning, these two chapters of Ruth. Let's say a quick prayer before we get started. Okay, let's pray. God in heaven, we thank you for this morning. Thank you for the time we get to open up your word. Thank you for this avenue of prayer. Thank you for the examples of Ruth and Boaz and Naomi and lessons we get to glean from these great stories of providence and your great plan. Bless us always in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we're in chapter 3, Ruth chapter 3. Tracy gave a little bit of an overview of the entire book, some character description of the key players here in the book of Ruth. Ruth, her mother-in-law Naomi, and their relative Boaz, who's a wealthy man, who allows Ruth to glean from the fields. And we know the story well, but maybe there's some things we can pull from these chapters that we haven't considered before, or just to remind ourselves of God's great plan, utilizing Boaz and Ruth. We're going to read a good bit of this. These chapters are not long, so we'll dissect these section by section. Let's look at verse 1, chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." She replied, "All that you say I will do." Naomi is playing a little bit of a matchmaker here. She tells Ruth to get all dolled up, wash yourself, prepare yourself, dress up for the occasion, and you're going to go to Boaz. He's at the threshing floor. They're harvesting at harvest time now, and they're working there from presumably sun up to sundown, so they're just going to stay there at the threshing floor. And Naomi says, "Here's what you're going to do. Ruth, you're going to wash yourself, make yourself up good, dress up well, and go to Boaz, and we're going to coordinate this to have him essentially propose to you." And what is Ruth's response to Naomi? "Whatever you say, I'll do." She's following suit. She's very, her character continues to be this humble and obedient daughter to Naomi. Let's see, I've got a slide here. I've kind of just have pictures that tell a story here, if I can get this to go. So they had this, Naomi comes up with this plan. And it doesn't seem to be, it's not nefarious in any way. It's not a wicked idea, but she is taking initiative to make sure that this works out, that this is going to be fulfilled. I've heard some examples of people giving an illustration talking about how, you know, we have to trust the Lord, certainly. And God is behind all these details. He's really orchestrating all of these things. But we can't just say, you know, just let God take control. I'm not going to do anything about it. And I've heard and seen where people are crediting Naomi for being faithful, but also being proactive in her faith. Kind of an interesting take on that. So Naomi sets Ruth up to go to the threshing floor. And what does she tell Ruth to do? Yes, she tells him to wash herself and dress up. What does she tell him to do? Tell her to do. A little peculiar. There's a lot of foot talk in these two chapters. A lot of feet in these chapters. So she goes and says, all right, you're going to go to him. And while he's asleep, when no one can see you at a dark time, you're going to uncover his feet. And who knows really what the motive was there, but also heard how some people say, well, you know, when your feet are uncovered, it causes you to wake up. You may get waking up with cold feet. And there's some jokes there about cold feet and proposing and all that too, but we won't go into all that. So this is what she does. She goes in and she says, all that you say, I will do. And let's continue here in verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor, and she did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman laying at his feet. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now, now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. What kind of time is this in Israel? What kind of what have the people become in this nation and the surrounding areas? I'm hearing whispers. What about the end of Judges? What kind of situations were going on there? They're doing what was right in their own eyes. And was that very wholesome? Was that very godly? No, they're surrounded by not only remaining Canaanites, Philistines, and other city-state Canaanite inhabitants, but now the Israelites have been so influenced that they are just as wicked or even more wicked than the actions we see of Canaanites. This is a really still within a dark time of Israel, and it's such a, Boaz is such a light in this atmosphere of disobedience and wickedness. He says, may you be blessed by the Lord. He refers to God often when he speaks to Ruth and speaks to others. So we see his acknowledgement of God, this difficult, wicked time. So I wanted to bring that up first and foremost. This Boaz is a great guy. If we were to have a boy, after reading these chapters, if we were to adopt or foster a child or whatever, and we were able to have a name change, or I would want to have Boaz. I mean, call him Bo. Yeah, no? Okay. Boaz shows to be a great light in this dark time. So what happens? Ruth does, as she's told, she goes and lays down by Boaz's feet, uncovers his feet, and Boaz is startled, as I think any of us would be. He's just had a good night, says he has eaten and he's drunk and his heart was merry, he feels good, he's lying down. He wakes up with this woman at his feet. And what is her request? Verse 9, take me under your wing. I'm your close relative, and you are what? You're the Redeemer. You're my Redeemer. You're going to save me while I'm lost. We see a lot of mirroring aspects to us in Christ in this, and then continuing in the other chapter, the next chapter. So we see the way she's talking. This is not a moment of we want to romanticize this situation. But, you know, there may have been some love in there at some point, but this is a very utility type of arrangement to continue the lineage of Naomi and Ruth, and to really be a good asset for each other. And she's looking for help. She's asking for her, for him to spread his wings over her and to be a protector and to help supply her, rather than I'm in love with you. Let's run away together. But we see that this arrangement is trying to prolong this lineage. So what is Boaz's response to Ruth? First of all, he says, "Who are you?" She says, "I'm Ruth. Spread your wings over me. You're my redeemer." What does he say then? "Blessed are you." Yeah, all right. He says that in verse 10. "Blessed be by the Lord." And he goes on, he then says what? Right, so he says, "I will do this, I will redeem you, but there is someone who's closer in kinsmanship to you than I am. So we'll prepare it, we'll offer it to him, and then I will take the reins if he does not." Let's go to verse 14. "So she lay at his feet until morning." So he instructs her to do that. "She lays at his feet until morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, 'Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor.' And he said, 'Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out.' So she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, 'How did you fare, my daughter?' Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, 'These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, "You shall not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law."' She replied, 'Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today.'" So she has this conversation with Boaz, and they said, Boaz says, "Okay, don't leave right away, but wait till the morning, rest. Wait till the morning, and before you go," he says, "we don't want someone to know that there was a woman that came to the threshing floor here with the men working." So what does he tell her to do? He says, "Hold out your garment that you're wearing," and what does he do for her? Gives her a lot of barley, right. Why did he do this? There may be 2 answers to this. Why did he do this? Okay, to care for their needs. He says in she says in verse 17, "Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." What's another reason he might do this? There's a woman that comes to the threshing floor where a man is sleeping. She lies down at his feet. What other reason might he do this? Yeah, so he's not trying to make a cover up, but he is giving a legitimate reason for her to be there. He says, "Look, let's avoid gossip here. You're going to walk away with all this barley, even though the reason that they came together, the reason this conversation happened in the place that it did, was a wholesome, okay reason, nothing fishy about it. But someone from the outside looking in could see Boaz is not doing the right thing here. Neither is Ruth. So he gives her barley. She goes there and leaves with clay. That's just an assumption there. But she leaves with all this barley and comes back to Ruth. I'm sorry, comes back to Naomi. And what's the conversation here? Look at verse 16. He'll take care of things. Yeah, Ruth tells Naomi, Boaz is going to... take care of things. Does anyone have the King James Version, the old King James Version? Verse 16, I'm reading from the ESV. Verse 16 says, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Which is a really good translation. The King James Version says, "Who are you?" And some commentaries and some other perspectives on this have weighed in on why this translation is the way it is. King James saying, "Who are you?" Others, what does the New King James say? Is that you, my daughter? Okay. So there are some ideas that this is, they're curious. She's curious. Who is it? Who's at my door? But Naomi knows who it is. She's coming into her home. And the way the ESV says is, "How did you fare, my daughter?" King James Version saying, "Who are you?" And so that's saying, "Who are you? Are you Miss Ruth or are you Mrs. Boaz? Did you come back married? How did you fare? How did this work out? What's the situation now?" So she tells Naomi that Boaz has got it taken care of. He said he's going to take care of everything. Right. This is all within the darkness of the night. Yep, so that's a good perspective too. And that's a pretty easy thing to deduce from this information is Ruth comes back, it's all at night. This was just a matter of a few hours, really, of Naomi coming up with this plan, telling Ruth what to do. Ruth goes to Boaz, collects the barley, has the conversation, comes back. It's just a few hours. It's all in the darkness of night, in the same night. So she could have very well said, "Who is that?" You know, not knowing who that is. But different translations lead us to some different conclusions. Nevertheless, she comes back and she says, Boaz is going to fulfill what he said he was going to do. And Boaz is true to his word, we see in in chapter 4. Any comments or anything up until this point? Yeah, Tracy just mentions again in verse 10, not only is Boaz acknowledging the Lord and blessing her, saying the Lord bless her, but he's saying, you're doing this by the book, Ruth. You're doing this the right way. You're not going after the young men, whether poor or rich. You are fulfilling, you're living your life and you're doing it. You're not living as the world is around us. Just going after and doing things the way that they would see fit. Yep, good observation. Their character is, Brother Jimmy mentions in verse 11, how Boaz goes on to say, kind of piggyback on what Tracy was saying in verse 11, he says that Ruth is a worthy woman, that she's known, and the townsmen know that she is a worthy woman. She's a virtuous woman. And that her character shines through in the way she handles and carries herself, as well as Boaz. Boaz's character shines through in the way he is true to his word, and Naomi knows that and says he'll take care of, and this will be settled, the matter will be settled today in verse 18. Good point. So, high quality people. Yes, sir. Right. Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Brent brings up Deuteronomy 25, fulfilling that part of the law in Deuteronomy 25 in both chapter 3 and chapter 4 of Ruth. We'll talk about that in just a moment. All right, let's continue in chapter 4. So this is following this immediately. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer, of whom Boaz had spoken, came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here. Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling a parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." And he said, this is the Redeemer, and he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance." Then the Redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom of the former times of Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm a transaction. The one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a matter of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elder and all the people, "You are all witness this day, or you are witness this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and that belong to Chilion and to Mahlon." Sorry, I lost my place. "Also, Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead of his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are a witness this day." Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are a witness. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be reowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore Judah. Because of the offspring of the Lord will give you by this young woman." Okay, sorry, I got a little cross-eyed there for a moment. So Boaz fulfills this request of Ruth, and he goes to the city gates. And he goes and he sits down there. So the city gates would have been like the town square, kind of the courthouse where business would have been handled, would have been conducted. Then he collects 10 men, elders of the city, and he has them to be witness of this situation, this conversation between him and the Redeemer. Do we know who this Redeemer is? No, we don't. And we see how his name is not mentioned, and that just shows that he's completely out of the picture, really. He's not even mentioned by name. So these 10 witnesses are there, and Boaz tells them what's going on. He says, "Would you like to have this piece of land that came with Naomi? She's a widow." And he says, "You're the closest to kin, so you have to redeem it. If not, then I will." And what does the Redeemer say? Okay, he first says, "Yes." I mean, wouldn't you? Someone says, "Hey, there's a whole bunch of land that's really got your name on it. Would you like it?" So he says, "Well, yes, I will. I'll take that. I'll redeem it." And Boaz says, "Okay, well, there's kind of a package deal with this. Not only is it the land, but you get the original. You get Ruth, you get Naomi, because Ruth and Naomi are are staying together, and you have to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. So now you have to support this offspring as well as maintain this property. So it's really a very big bit of inheritance or income for this redeemer. That's a lot to be redeemed. Boaz is kind of breaking down how much he is taking on if this redeemer does not take the deal, take the situation, take the offering. Boaz breaks down all the things that he will inherit, all the things that he will redeem. And we see the how humbling and or humble and helpful Boaz is to this family. So how do they strike the deal? Okay, this redeemer says, okay, well, nope, I don't want that. I'll surrender my collection, I guess, and let you be the redeemer since you're second in line. I don't want it. And why doesn't he want to redeem this? Okay. Josh said it may jeopardize his own inheritance. This kind of throws a wrench in his lineage, his kind of his inheritance. So he passes this. Okay, so what do they do now? Brent brought up Deuteronomy 25. What do they do now in this negotiation? What does this unnamed redeemer do? Okay. All right, so connecting to Deuteronomy 25, there is some debate, I suppose, on exactly how this was handled. Is this exactly Deuteronomy 25, or is this symbolic of other things? It seems to fall in line with Deuteronomy 25, where if you are to not take on the role of marrying your past brother or your relative's wife, then you relinquish your duties and you give your shoe over to the one who will take that on. But this kind of has a disgraceful connotation to it. There's a bit of disgrace of the man who does not redeem his this widow. So there's some debate on exactly how this is portrayed or how this is interpreted. But there's some idea also that we can see some symbolism that Deuteronomy pulls from this, and that this instant pulls from in Deuteronomy chapter 11. Let me turn there real quick. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, there's an idea here that, verse 24, every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. Your territory shall be from the wilderness to the Lebanon and from the river. So every place on which your sole of your foot treads. In Joshua 1:3, same thing is mentioned there. Joshua, every place on where your foot treads, that will be your inheritance. That will be, you will own that. There's mention in Psalm 60 and verse 8 of a shoe being cast toward the property they want to own in Edom. So there's some idea, or Moab is my wash basin. Upon Edom I cast my shoe. So there's a lot of connection here that we could pull from passages before this time and those written after, but also connecting to Deuteronomy 25. Just an interesting thing. It was just a custom that the Israelites did in a transaction of property, and we could pull a lot of passages to connect those things. Interesting. But nevertheless, the original Redeemer releases his responsibility. It says his right here in Scripture, his responsibility to take on this property and along the other assets that come with that, these individuals and then the inheritance. And he gives it to Boaz. And what do the 10 witnesses say about this? They witness the situation. That's good. So now if the original Redeemer said, well, wait a minute, he got to think about it. That's a lot of land, or that will actually be, I can twist things to make it work my way. He has 10 witnesses, so he has some insurance there. What do these witnesses say? They bless him. This is a good thing for Boaz to take on such a large responsibility. Who do they reference in this blessing? Rachel and Leah, and who else? Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So we can understand the Rachel and Leah idea. We can connect that pretty quickly. Why is Perez and Tamar and Judah mentioned? What do you think? There's not a necessarily this is the answer. They're in the lineage of Christ. What's that story? What was the deal with Tamar and Judah? Who was Tamar to Judah? Daughter-in-law. Okay, what does Tamar do? Tamar loses husband after husband. Okay. And Judah falls to that. Judah falls for the disguise of a prostitute that Tamar has put on. She takes matters into her own hands, if you will, to continue the lineage. And it's a difficult situation. There come twins, Perez and Zerah, in Genesis 38. And Perez is now part of the lineage of Christ. And we see it's a unique situation there where Ruth is kind of falling into this category of Tamar, in a sense, where Ruth is now falling into this place to be an essential level or tier in this lineage. And really, they're in their short scope of vision here, they're just continuing the line. They don't know God's ultimate plan, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. They're just trying to continue this their own lineage. Let's continue. Right. Similar to Boaz and Judah. Judah becomes this redeemer, unintentionally, becomes this redeemer of this lineage and inheritance. And as is Boaz, is now voluntarily becoming this redeemer. So there's some similarities there. Yeah, so the list of priorities is different between this original redeemer and Boaz. Boaz sees the value of Ruth and Naomi and the good he can do there, fulfill there. And the land doesn't even seem to be on his radar, whereas that's line number one for this original redeemer. Print. Right, so we'll mention that here in just a couple of verses. It's a good point. Brent brings up the lineage of that's mentioned in Matthew 1. We'll look at. You can imply that, yeah. Yeah, Caleb mentions that Tamar, you can pretty quickly deduce that Tamar was not native, that she was an outsider, as is Ruth. Where was Ruth from? Moab. But her husband was what? Israelite. So there's a lot of similarities there. It's really, it's almost like this was a well-orchestrated series of events. All right, let's continue. We've only got a few minutes left here. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went to her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. We see that intervention there. You know, she now has a son, that the Lord gave her a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. Very quickly, look at Ruth 1. 21. What does Naomi say about herself? In 21. The Lord has brought me back. What? empty. She's now empty and she wanted her name changed. She was so depressed and was so low. And now, in verse 15 of chapter 4, he has been a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. Let's continue. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So we see a quick lesson here. Naomi, just as low as she's ever been, has lost so much. And she says, don't even call me Naomi anymore, but call me Mara, because I'm bitter, I'm empty, I am dead inside, there's nothing left in me. And now, what is she now? She's this blessed woman who gets to be in the lineage and related to David. We get to see this great picture that God has orchestrated. And just because something negative happens in her life that seems so bad that she wants to have a new identity, things have changed that have exponentially increased her value of life and perspective in the life of Jesus, the beginning of Jesus. Let's wrap this up very quickly. Now, these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Abinadab. Abinadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. Where does Boaz? Remember, Boaz was kind of injected into this line, a descendant of Perez. He is injected in this line because of Ruth and Naomi's intervention. Where does Boaz fall on that listing? What number? You can probably have a good guess if you don't want to count. He's seventh. That's just pretty interesting that this completion here mentioned in this lineage, that Boaz is number seven in this. So he goes down, we get to see this great big picture that God has orchestrated from what seems to be rubble. If ever there's a difficult or minimal, this is a really great picture. If there ever seems to be a difficult or low time in the time of Israel, then we need to pay attention because God's about to do some incredible things. If there's ever an underdog who's ready to serve the Lord, then we need to pay attention because God's going to bring them up on top. Thank you for your attention this quarter. Thank you for allowing me to teach. And thank you for all the participation and comments. I've enjoyed the study and look forward to next quarter studying with all of you again. Thanks.